The 2014 Cupera features plush leather seating that will feel to your hemorrhoids like sitting on lava-hot knitting needles.
Not if you step up to relief with the power of two from Preparation H. First, use Preparation H medicated wipes to soothe as they clean. Then Preparation H maximum strength cream to relieve pain and burning.
Now sink into that rich upholstery. Luxurious.
Preparation H. Don't stand for hemorrhoids. Use as directed. Look for Preparation H at Walgreens.
All coughs aren't the same, and neither are all cough medicines. Some just suppress your coughs while doing nothing to clear the congestion that causes them. Robitussin's powerful dual-action formula relieves even the toughest coughs. Wet. Dry. And hacking. Don't risk partial relief. Fast, powerful Robitussin DM Max fights your cough and helps clear the congestion that comes with it. Robitussin. Don't suffer the coughequences. Use as directed.
Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. How big is the problem of companion animal overpopulation and its associated consequence, euthanasia of adoptable dogs and cats? Current estimates by the Humane Society of the United States are that each year approximately 6 to 8 million animals enter U.S. shelters and 3 to 4 million are euthanized. Do you ever wonder where those numbers come from? Is there a single authoritative source, various sources, or are the numbers rough estimates? Now, we need to have accurate statistics if we're going to know the best ways to act to reduce the euthanasia of otherwise adoptable dogs and cats, right? Also, when examining some of the statistics, you may find surprises and unexpected numbers, as I have. So where should we place our efforts? Promoting adoptions, sterilization programs, changes in the law, public education? Well, we need to know the facts. Today we explore these questions and more with Merrick Clifton, who is the universally acclaimed expert on the trends and statistics on companion animal populations, adoption, euthanasia, and more. Merrick is editor of Animal People, which is the leading independent newspaper providing original investigative coverage of animal protection worldwide. Merrick's been a news reporter, editor, columnist, and foreign correspondent since 1968, specializing in animal and habitat-related coverage since 1978. He's a charter member of the Society of Environmental Journalists and a four-time winner of national awards for investigative reporting. Merritt has a special interest in infectious diseases, and in 2010, he was awarded the ProMed Mail Award for excellence in outbreak and reporting on the Internet. Welcome to the program, Merritt.
Glad to be here.
Merritt, the Humane Society of the United States claims that 6 to 8 million dogs and cats enter U.S. shelters annually, and approximately half of those animals are euthanized. Are these numbers fairly accurate?
Yes. The squishy point is the definition of a shelter, whether you consider a shelter to be a freestanding building that does nothing but handle incoming dogs and cats, or a veterinary office that handles animal control, or a privately operated rescue. So that's why there's the squishiness between 6 to 8 million. The fact is we know that there is about 6 million animals a year right now coming into fixed location shelters. The 2 million is the squishier side that involves the rescues and other facilities that perform the functions of a shelter without necessarily being an animal shelter in the classic sense. The number of animals killed in shelters right now has actually dropped below 3 million, just barely, in each of my last two annual surveys covering 2013 and 2012. So give or take a very small amount, it's probably just barely under 3 million at this time. That splits just about exactly half and half between dogs and cats, by the way.
Okay, and later we're going to break down these numbers more specifically. Merritt, where do these statistics come from? Who and what makes up these calculations?
Well, the survey that I do is based on every shelter in communities that make up a total of 51% of U.S. population, and that is regionally balanced so that I have good urban versus rural, Appalachia versus Deep South versus Midwest, Upper Midwest versus Lower Midwest, West Coast versus East Coast. All these things I balance using proportional weighting when I'm not able to get enough data. But mostly for most parts of the country, at this point, I'm able to get plenty of data. The key part is to make sure that I have the data from every shelter that does a significant amount of primary intake in the community. By primary intake, I mean open admission and animal control, because they're the ones that are having to accept every animal, and they're the ones that accept the animals who end up being euthanized. The no-kill shelters are mostly secondary intake, taking animals out of the open admission and animal control shelters. So those have already been triaged by someone else.
What are the biggest challenges or problems in trying to determine these national statistics accurately?
There's not really much problem to it. It's all statistics 1A. The difficulty in the early years when I was doing this 25 years ago was that many shelters were very secretive about their data, and it often wasn't kept very carefully. Dogs and cats would be lumped together, or adult animals and whole litters who were put down together in a gas chamber would be counted as one unit, because it would be one time that the chamber was run. But we're a heck of a long way past that now. Pretty much everybody keeps good statistics now, because there's now a lot of recognition of the value in them. Some are more secretive about releasing data than others, but I would say that at this point I have very good cooperation from anybody that I ask for the numbers from. Sometimes they don't, to this day, they still don't have them all broken down exactly as I would like it, but the SOMAR Accords has a standardized reporting form that is now used by about maybe a third of the shelters in the country. That's a very good start. Animal control shelters in many states are required to report their data every year. Some states, like Virginia, require every shelter to report their data every year. So it's just way, way easier than it was 25 and 30 years ago.
Nationally, Merritt, are we euthanizing fewer healthy and adoptable dogs and cats than, say, compared to the 1970s?
It's a fraction. Back in 1970, which was probably the low mark but the highest number of animals killed, U.S. shelters killed about 23.4 million total animals, according to my estimates from shelter data. Andrew Rowan of the Humane Society of the U.S. puts that about 10 million lower based on other pet population data. And I think that the approach he's taking is generally valid, but I think that he's missing the numbers of puppies and kittens who were at that time either gassed or decompressed as whole litters with their mothers. That was a very common practice then, and those animals were very often counted as only one unit, because what they were counting was the number of times the machine ran.
What factors?
That's come down. U.S. shelters are now admitting only about a seventh as many total animals as they did then, and in turn, the killing has come down from 23 million to 3, even though the total number of dogs and cats in the country has doubled since 1970. We're keeping approximately twice as many dogs and approximately twice as many cats in our homes. But the deal is, we're keeping them now for an average of more than 6 years apiece, whereas back in the early 70s, we were keeping the average dog or cat for about 3 years before it ran off or got hit by a car or, for one reason or another, was passed along or taken to a shelter.
Merritt, can you break down the percentages for us? Of all the dogs and cats that get into new homes each year, what percentage of them are adopted, like from rescues and shelters? What percentage of them are purchased, say, from breeders and pet stores? And what percentage of them come through other means?
Well, ballpark, we're around 20-25% adopted. And that really hasn't changed very much over the last 25 years or so. A ballpark around... this varies greatly from dogs to cats, by the way. About 40% of dogs come from breeders, and there's another percentage which has been declining that come directly from pet stores. The remainder include born at home, found at large. That's a number that has come drastically down. Free to good home, that's another number that has come drastically down. What we have seen happening over the last 30 years is that the percentages that are adopted from shelters have gone up a bit, drawing from the former free to good home and found at large categories primarily. The number arriving from breeders is pretty much flatlined. The number arriving from pet stores has become complicated because now and actually for the last 20-some years, the two largest pet store chains in the country, Petco and PetSmart, have handled only animals from shelters. So when you do these surveys, you get a lot of people saying they got their animal at a pet store, but the animal actually got to the pet store from a shelter.
We're speaking to Merrick Clifton. We're talking about the numbers and euthanasia rates and statistics from the shelters in our country. Very interesting stuff. Don't go away. You're listening to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner.
Well, the party was nice. The party was bumping. And everybody having a ball. Until the fellas started in calling. And the girls respond to the call. I have a bull with shout out.
Who let the dog? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
I see the donkey, had a falcon, Billy Bungers, get out. Get back, Gruffy, Boss Gruffy, get back, you flea infested mongrel. Gonna tell myself I'm a no get angry. Two Eddie cows calling them canine.
Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for listening to Animals Today. Make sure to visit us on animalstodayradio.com, where you will see all our previous shows, and you can download them free. That's animalstodayradio.com. Also, make sure to become a friend on Facebook. Animals Today gets a lot of its support from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Check them out at aianimals.org, and I hope you'll consider making a donation to help pay for the ongoing broadcast of Animals Today. Each week on Animals Today, we strive to bring you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animal welfare topics, and we certainly would appreciate your support. That website again is aianimals.org. And thanks for listening.
If you're struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? Fast Track Student Loans can get your student loans out of default, stop any wage garnishments, stop collection calls, and stop seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and get your student loan payments down to as little as $25 a month based on what you can afford to pay. One quick 10-minute call could help you solve your student loan problems. So call right now. Not available in all states. Payments may vary based on income.
800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. That's 800-685-0129.
Whenever I need to get work done remotely, it happens.
Office Max has a full range of tablets, so you can be productive from anywhere.
See? Now, about this presentation I need to send.
Office Max has a services center to do all your printing, binding, and shipping.
This is crazy. I think I need to sit down.
Office Max has the new WorkPro chairs that are designed to last.
Wow.
If you need it for your business, you'll find it at Office Max, all at great prices. Restrictions apply. See storeofficemax.com for details.
Hot plates, cool stories. Share both this winter at P.F. Chang's. Gather your friends and try one of the six dishes on our new winter seasonal menu, like the savory red wine and pepper braised beef, or the orange ginger beet salad with fresh oranges and honey ginger dressing. And for a limited time, visit pfchangs.com and get an offer for $10 off a $40 purchase. See you soon.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS that you can't pay? Call now for immediate help. 866-657-8517. At Community Tax Relief, we help consumers like you. If you take on the IRS alone, you could be facing levies, liens, even wage garnishments, personal or business tax issues. If you owe the IRS $10,000 or more, they will aggressively come after you. Protect yourself and your family today from what the IRS can do to you. Call now. 866-657-8517. They can freeze your bank account, even garnish your wages. Our expert team of tax professionals can solve your tax problems once and for all. Call now for a free 5-minute tax debt analysis. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517.
Welcome back to the show. We're speaking to Merritt Clifton, who's editor of Animal People. Merritt, is there an estimate of the overall percentage of dogs and cats living in the U.S. who are from breeders or puppy mills?
Working about 40% of the dogs come from breeders. The definition of puppy mill is a bit difficult. Some people refer to any large-scale breeding operation as a puppy mill. Others restrict that to organization that has been convicted or through a civil procedure identified as having neglectful conditions. What I can say is that we have seen the numbers of animals who were impounded directly from breeders zoom up within the last decade to unprecedented heights, partly through stronger enforcement and more public awareness, partly through stronger laws. So that actually topped out at more than 10,000 and has now come down to around half of that as the breeding community is on notice. But if you go back before about 10 years, the top end for impoundments from breeders in a year was less than 2,500. But there's an alarming trend, a very alarming trend to me, parallel to that. And that is that if you go back to the period of time, 1982 to 1998, the first 15 and a half years that I tracked animals impounded in neglect cases of all types, only about 25% were from people who proclaimed themselves to be shelters or rescues and actually had the trappings such as a nonprofit incorporation, an advertising campaign of some sort, a public facility. That has now come up tenfold. The total numbers of animals impounded has come up tenfold, and the numbers impounded from failed shelters and rescues now significantly exceed the numbers impounded from puppy mills. And that really should not be happening. That's a monumental failure of the shelter and rescue community to effectively self-police so that you don't have hoarding operations masquerading as no-kill shelters.
Merritt, you
now,
said earlier
this is actually accounting for more animals coming into shelters now than the puppy mills.
Understood. You said earlier that about 20 to 25% of dogs and cats are obtained through adoptions from shelters and rescue groups. So shouldn't our efforts be focused on significantly trying to increase this percentage, getting people to adopt in order to decrease the euthanasia rate?
In fact, the total number of adoptions in the U.S. has been flatlined at between 4 and 5 million for about 30 years. There was a big surge in adoption in the late 70s, early 80s, as the marketing techniques pioneered by the North Shore Animal League America and the Denver Dumb Friends League and a few others, San Francisco SPCA, became known. So adoptions at that point zoomed. They reached the level of about 4 to 5 million, and that's where they have stayed. You can look at the numbers for any given community, and you will see that there has been a change in the distribution of adoptions with all of this additional publicity being done. There's far more going through the PetSmart and Petco stores, for example, than any retail facility could claim 20 and more years ago. There are a lot more hard case animals being placed and far fewer puppies and kittens because far fewer puppies and kittens are coming into shelters. And nowadays, all the animals adopted out, or almost all, have been sterilized, which was certainly not the case 20 and 30 years ago. But the total adoption market, it really could not be more flatlined, and we're seeing greatly diminished returns for the total amount of investment in adoption promotion. I'll give you one very good example. The Home for the Holidays program, which is promoted by the Helen Woodward Animal Shelter in Southern California, very successful program run by Mike Arms, who is a marketing genius. I can't praise Mike too highly. But they had a very rapid rise in the early years of the program. And over the last 6 years, no matter how much money has been invested in trying to make it grow, it's been flatlined at about 1.1 million adoptions per year, with almost every shelter in the United States participating. And they're counting all the adoptions that occur in the period from October 1 to the end of the year. If you multiply that out over a year's time, with all of that promotional effort, they are still in the bracket of 4 to 5 million total adoptions per year, which is exactly where the humane community was when the whole program started about 12 years ago.
Wow. It's sure going to be hard, like, for people like me and other organizations to not really put our efforts into promoting adoption. So, Merritt, you mentioned 3 million. We're still killing 3 million healthy adoptable animals.
They're not healthy adoptable animals. That's the first misnomer. Back when we were killing 23 million animals a year, we were killing 20 million healthy, potentially adoptable animals per year. Except there weren't that many homes to put them into. These days, we have gotten the total numbers way down, but you still have your hard case animals who are in the shelter in the first place because they have a significant behavioral problem, whether it's inappropriate elimination or tearing up the furniture, or they've bitten somebody, or maybe several people, or a cat who just plain cannot be handled. Those animals are never going to be easily adopted. They will require extensive remedial work if they are going to be successfully rehomed at all. And in many cases, when they are older animals, even if you put the work into the remedial care and whatever physical ailments they may have that need treating, the animal doesn't have that long a life ahead. So it's still a very difficult adoption prospect. People don't want to take an animal home and be heartbroken in 6 months or a year. So these are hard cases, and most of the animals now being placed by U.S. shelters, I would add, are the animals who would have been considered the hardest of hard cases 20 and some years ago. So we're down to the hard cases, and it will be harder and harder to do something for the remaining three some million animals.
What, in your opinion, needs to be done to get this number near zero?
It won't go near zero. That's unrealistic. It may go down about one more million, but you are always going to have a certain number of animals coming into shelters who nothing can be done for. They're the advanced cancer cases. They're the animals who are incorrigibly dangerous. They're the animals who are simply so frightened to be around humans that they do nothing but shake uncontrollably and hide in the corner of their cage. Some of those animals will respond to remedial care. Some simply will not. Some will actually die of the stress. You also have the animals who have been hit by cars and so forth.
Merritt, we got to go. Don't go away. More with Merritt Clifton. We're talking about trends and statistics on companion animal populations and on euthanasia and adoption. So we're learning so much here. You're listening to Animals Today.
temperatures climb. Please remember to never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute on a warm day with the windows cracked and in the shade. The temperature inside a car can climb up in a matter of minutes, and it's enough to kill your pet. If you love your pet, leave them at home or with someone you trust. Keep them cool, comfortable, and alive. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a moment to save their life. Here are a couple of steps that you should remember. Make an announcement in the store or business the car is parked nearest to, and call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two on a hot day to kill an animal left inside a car. Your swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can. Never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at AIAnimals.org. That's the letter A, I, animals.org.
This is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for joining us on Animals Today. Each week, we explore the wide variety of important issues concerning the welfare of animals, how people treat them, and where they fit in our society. From whale protectors on the open seas, to lawyers in court, to scouts helping their local shelter, join me to get the latest on animal welfare news, stories, and events from around the world. And visit us on Facebook to join the conversation. That's Animals Today every week, right here on the station, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Also, make sure to visit us at animalstodayradio.com, where you can listen to any of our previous shows free. Animals Today brings you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animal welfare topics. Much of our support comes from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Check them out at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org. And thanks for listening.
If you're a homeowner who's faithfully made your mortgage payments, you deserve thanks for doing the right thing. And I'd like to tell you about a powerful financial tool that rewards your commitment. Hi, I'm Jay Farner, president of Quicken Loans. And the tool that I'm talking about is the Home Affordable Refinance Program, or HARP. HARP is designed to help you lower your mortgage payments. It's for homeowners who are current on their mortgage payments, but due to the housing market, may have little or no equity left in their home. And even if you were unable to get a HARP loan in the past, new guidelines mean that now you may be eligible. More than 2.5 million homeowners have already taken advantage of HARP and are saving an average of $250 a month. If you're one of the millions yet to take advantage, call us today at 800-QUICKEN. To learn more, call Quicken Loans today at 800-QUICKEN or go to quickenloans.com. That number again is 800-QUICKEN.
Important terms and conditions apply. Call us for cost information. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 33.
In 1942, Eleanor flipped her wig about Geico saving her moolah on her motor insurance.
Hey, man. In 1969, Ace saved enough dough with Geico to go to Woodstock. His only memory? The savings.
In 1984, Stephanie, like, saved, like, majorly on her car insurance with Geico. It was, like, so totally righteous.
Over the past 75 years, the expressions have changed, but one thing hasn't. Saving money with Geico.
Have you heard? Proactive is America's top acne system because it's fast and gentle, and it's all about prevention. So stay tuned for a chance to participate in a 60-day trial to prove it. Do you have troubled skin, acne? With Proactive, you can heal your acne and help prevent new breakouts. Right now, in this radio area, we're looking for just 50 people with moderate acne to demonstrate exactly how fast Proactive works. The first 50 callers who qualify can try Proactive risk-free for 60 days. And you get our dermatologist's clear skin or it's free guarantee. Plus, the trial includes our legendary refining mask and green tea moisturizer free. Be one of the 50 lucky people to complete this 60-day risk-free trial. You won't see this offer in stores or on TV. It's a radio exclusive. Supplies are limited and the trial offer ends soon. So call now. 1-800-569-4918. That's 1-800-569-4918. 1-800-569-4918.
We already have the lowest prices on flooring, but now you can save even more on every floor in our new catalog at Lumber Liquidator Spring Flooring Sale. Get the look of hardwood for 49 cents a square foot, beautiful bamboo for just $139. Plus, get $100 to $500 off over 130 varieties of hardwood, over 50 varieties of laminate, and more. Minimum purchase applies. See store for details. We have over 350 incredibly low-priced floors, and now you can save even more. Hurry, sale's going on now. Visit LumberLiquidators.com or your local store today.
Welcome back to the show. Merritt, I want to talk a little bit about dogs and cats who are purchased from breeders and pet shops. Do you believe the fact that we breed and sell millions of animals every year contributes to pet overpopulation problem as a whole and to the high numbers of euthanasia of adoptable dogs and cats in our shelters?
On the cat side, deliberate breeding is a non-factor because so few cats are deliberately bred. On the dog side of the coin, it's much more complicated. At this point, about 80% of the dogs that are going through shelters have been deliberately bred by somebody. Of those, about 25 to 30% are a range of breeds that were produced for sale by breeders and pet stores, and they arrive at a variety of ages. The remainder are pit bulls, and this is the biggest problem in shelters right now. The percentage of dogs arriving in U.S. shelters who are in the pit bull class has risen from about 2% in 1986 to about 5% by 1993, 23% by 2003, and it was 38% in 2012-2013. And with that kind of rise in percentages, we've also seen a huge rise in the absolute numbers and a huge rise in the percentage who have been killed in shelters. It was about 5% of the dogs killed in shelters were pit bulls back in 1986, which means that they were being put down at about twice the rate that they arrived. It's gone up to now, it's more than 60% of the dogs killed in shelters are pit bulls, even though shelters are rehoming pit bulls at the rate of about 16% of the dogs they adopt out per year. But this is another one of those cases of diminishing returns that I pointed out earlier. 10 years ago, with relatively little promotion of pit bulls, about 13% of the dogs rehomed by shelters were pit bulls. And it's only come up 3% with all the massive promotion that's been done over the last 10 years. Now, to also put that number in perspective, only about 5% of the dogs in the country are pit bulls. So people, when they acquire a pit bull, acquire a dog from a breeder or a store or a free-to-good home or any of these other methods, only about 5% are choosing a pit bull, whereas if they go to a shelter, about 16% are being sold a pit bull. Now, that's another situation where I think the adoption potential has been top-ended and incidentally dangerously top-ended, because we have, in the first 90 years of the 20th century, there was not even one fatal or disfiguring dog attack involving a pit bull from a U.S. shelter. And there are actually only two fatal attacks by dogs from U.S. shelters in the first 90 years of the 20th century. We have had, in the less than 5 years of the current decade, we've already had more than 30 shelter pit bulls involved in fatal attacks. And that should just scare the hell out of everybody, because it only took 26 exploding Ford Pinto gas tanks over a seven-year period of time to completely kill the sales of what had been the most popular car in the United States. Shelters cannot take that kind of risk with their image and public trust.
Right. Are pit bulls sterilized less frequently than other dogs?
Excuse me, I didn't hear the first part of the question.
Do you know if pit bulls are sterilized less frequently than
dogs? And that's actually gone backward. As of 2003, it looked like about 25% of the pit bulls in the country were sterilized, upward of 30% on the coasts. The numbers have come down to where it looks like right now only about 20% of the pit bulls in the country are sterilized, and it's around 25% or less on the coasts, where it used to be higher. So you have a lot more people with them. You also have a lot more people who are doing backyard breeding, trying to turn a fast buck on producing a litter. And the backyard breeding is by far a bigger problem than the puppy mills.
How about all these organizations out there that I totally support that really try to promote the adoption of pit bulls?
Well, it's wishful thinking. you could compare the situation. The shelter market is basically a secondary market, much like the used car market, where you're dependent on whatever people pass along. That's your intake. And at a certain point, when gas prices go up and people get tired of driving SUVs, the used car lots all get crowded with SUVs. Now, no matter what they do to promote SUVs, there's only a certain segment of the public who still wants to drive them, so you're going to end up with a surplus. Well, people may not like to think of dogs in the same manner that they think of used cars, but if you look at the marketing dynamics, they're identical. The shelters are glutted. They're trying to promote what they're glutted with because they don't want to have to send the dogs off to the scrapyard, and nobody wants to kill a dog. But that's where they are. They've got this astronomical surplus of one type of dog. And even if they were all Lassie, there's only so many people who want a dog in that particular size and weight and energy range.
Merritt, some cities have enacted laws that ban breeds of dogs like pit bulls, and also where I live in Southern California, Riverside County, we've enacted a ban that mandates sterilization of pit bulls. What, if anything, have these laws accomplished? Because, Merritt, I've read studies where they don't accomplish much, that
they don't cover the problem. The big example people use is the British law that exempted Staffordshires. They tried to ban pit bulls exempting Staffordshires, who are actually the original pit bull type. So it's like not having a law. But if you look at San Francisco, for example, which mandated pit bull sterilization in 2006, it's the only major city in the U.S. which has actually seen a dramatic net decrease in pit bull impoundments, shelter killing, incidents involving pit bulls, all those things right across the boards. And it was a 23% drop in pit bulls coming into the shelters just within the first 2 years after they mandated sterilization. You could also look at Denver, which has banned all pit bulls for all but one 11-month period since 1986. And Miami that has prohibited pit bulls also since 1986. And they are the two other cities in the United States that are killing the fewest pit bulls per capita with the lowest admissions. They're both below 5% of intake. And that is really remarkable when you consider that nationally they're 60% plus.
You know, I want to, in the last couple minutes of this segment, Merritt, I want to go back to breeders. I think breeders are the problem, personally, okay? One of the main problems here. And I think you mentioned, correct me if I'm wrong, that 80% of the dogs that enter shelters or that are euthanized are bred dogs. Is that correct?
But they don't come directly from breeders. They arrive at an average age of about 18 months. So they've been in a home typically for around a year, although it's often not the same home. And this is one of the other things actually involving pit bulls. It's remarkable. On average, they've had three homes by the time they arrive at a shelter: the birth home, the acquisition home, and at least one pass-along home. The average dog who comes to a shelter has had only the birth home and one home after acquisition. So that's a number that's of a great deal of significance. But in breeders, you're looking at two categories. You're looking at the backyard breeder and you're looking at the commercial breeder. The commercial breeder breeds to the market, basically, and the backyard breeder breeds to speculation. And it's the breeders who are breeding to speculation who end up with large numbers of surplus dogs who end up being passed along and for the most part end up in low-quality homes, in unstable homes, as opposed to the ones that go through directly from breeder to a screened home or to somebody who's willing to spend a lot of money at a pet store. We don't see a lot of pet store dogs ending up in shelters that at least are verifiably one stop removed from the pet store. We don't see the small dogs, for example, or the designer breeds in great numbers.
Okay. Well, still think we should put a stop to all breeding, period. But anyway, Merritt, don't go away. Listeners, don't go away. This is so interesting. We're going to talk about feral and stray cats right after the break. You're listening to Animals Today.
That's the sound of a dog whose vocal cords were cut just to stifle her voice. It's called devocalization, and it's done to cats as well. Devocalized animals rasp and wheeze, cough and gag the rest of their lives. Some are rendered mute. And for what? So a commercial or hobby breeder can keep many animals without having to listen to them. So show dogs will be quiet in transit between shows or in the ring. So an irresponsible pet owner can leave a dog alone for hours every day. Animals Today joins with Coalition to Protect and Rescue Pets in saying shame on anyone who would have a dog or cat devocalized, and shame on the vets who perform this inhumane, unnecessary surgery for them. Please speak out against devocalization of dogs and cats. Use your voice. Protect theirs.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at AIAnimals.org.
If you're struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? Fast Track Student Loans can get your student loans out of default, stop any wage garnishments, stop collection calls, and stop seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and get your student loan payments down to as little as $25 a month based on what you can afford to pay. One quick 10-minute call could help you solve your student loan problems. So call right now. Not available in all states. Payments may vary based on income.
800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. That's 800-685-0129.
The 2014 Cupera features plush leather seating that will feel to your hemorrhoids like sitting on lava-hot knitting needles.
Not if you step up to relief with the power of two from Preparation H. First, use Preparation H medicated wipes to soothe as they clean. Then Preparation H Maximum Strength Cream to relieve pain and burning.
Now sink into that rich upholstery. Luxurious.
Preparation H. Don't stand for hemorrhoids. Use as directed. Look for Preparation H at Walgreens.
All coughs aren't the same, and neither are all cough medicines. Some just suppress your coughs while doing nothing to clear the congestion that causes them. Robitussin's powerful dual-action formula relieves even the toughest coughs. Wet. Dry. And hacking. Don't risk partial relief. Fast, powerful Robitussin DM Max fights your cough and helps clear the congestion that comes with it. Robitussin. Don't suffer the coughsequences. Use as directed.
Watch what happens when I need something for business. Say my laptop just died.
Office Max has laptops, tablets, and printers that are perfect for you.
How'd she know? And why is this report in black and white?
Office Max has most major brands of ink and toner at the lowest prices guaranteed.
Okay, I'll go. Right after I clean up these files.
Office Max has cloud storage, so you can be productive on the road.
Isn't she amazing?
If you need it for your business, you'll find it at Office Max, all at great prices. Restrictions apply. See storeofficemax.com for details.
Hot plates, cool stories. Share both this winter at P.F. Chang's. Gather your friends and try one of the six dishes on our new winter seasonal menu, like the savory red wine and pepper braised beef, or the chili shrimp bao, our new Asian-inspired sliders. And for a limited time, visit pfchangs.com and get an offer for $10 off a $40 purchase. See you soon.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS that you can't pay? Call now for immediate help. 866-657-8517. At Community Tax Relief, we help consumers like you. If you take on the IRS alone, you could be facing levies, liens, even wage garnishments, personal or business tax issues. If you owe the IRS $10,000 or more, they will aggressively come after you. Protect yourself and your family today from what the IRS can do to you. Call now. 866-657-8517. They can freeze your bank account, even garnish your wages. Our expert team of tax professionals can solve your tax problems once and for all. Call now for a free 5-minute tax debt analysis. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517. 866-657-8517.
Merritt, I want to move on to feral and stray cats. There are many millions of feral cats in our country. In some communities, they are captured and usually end up euthanized. In other areas, they are essentially ignored. In other places, there are active trap, neuter, release programs to create managed feral cat colonies. What do you think is the best way to deal with these animals?
Well, best is an opinion, but effective is a statistic. The most effective way, and really the only effective way, to reduce a feral cat population is neuter return. And this is a technique that I was actually involved in field testing back in 1991-1992 in Connecticut with the cooperation and supervision of the late Dean Franklin Lowe of Tufts University and Andrew Rowan, who's now Vice President of the Humane Society of the U.S. They were our science advisors. I did the habitat assessment and kept the statistical log and did quite a lot of the cat trapping. We found at 8 locations that we achieved absolute zero. We zeroed out the population within less than 5 years. And actually, all but one of those locations, we had zeroed out the population in only 3 years with a technique that consisted of first doing a habitat assessment, finding out the number of cats, very rapidly trapping and sterilizing them, removing for adoption any who were young enough to be socialized or showed signs of having been former pets. We were working originally, it was a rabies control project in a raccoon rabies hot zone. Our initial objective was to create a vaccinated barrier between the feral population and the domestic pet population. But we found no rabies cases. We found only 19 cats who required euthanasia due to injury or illness. And the primary reason that we found actually was severe injury in fights with raccoons, but none of those animals had become rabid. So it was very successful, and we then promoted the technique. But it's politically very difficult. And one of the reasons why there's actually two major reasons why promoting neuter return is very difficult. One of them is that there are a lot of really ridiculous numbers thrown around by people about the numbers of feral cats that there actually are. We currently have, at any given time in the winter, around 6.5 million feral cats. At the peak of the population in summer, we might have as many as 13 million. And that's been pretty steady for the last 10 years. It's down considerably from the peak, which was reached 20 years earlier, of up to 40 million. The first survey of the U.S. outdoor population was done clear back in 1908, found 25 million. The next survey was done in 1927, found around 20 million. Another survey was done between 1947 and 1950 and found around 30 million. So it's been really a fairly stable population until the advent of neuter return. And then it came down about 75% in a 10-year period. And then it flatlined because that was the extent of what volunteers could do with their limited resources and with a lot of restrictions on where they can go and where they can release cats. The other side of the problem is that a lot of people who do neuter return insist on feeding the cats as well, and that's a mistake. If we are treating these animals as wildlife, which they are, they need to be treated completely as wildlife. Like they say, a fed bear is a dead bear. It's the same thing with a feral cat. If you are feeding the feral cat, you are modifying its behavior from being a mostly strictly nocturnal rodent hunter, hunting rats and mice, to hanging around the daytime waiting for the food handout and recreationally hunting birds. It doesn't matter if they don't hunt very many birds. That's another number that's greatly exaggerated. The fact is, when people see it, they get very upset. And then they want to purge the cats. They want to prevent neuter return. So right from the beginning of our project, although if people were already feeding feral cats, it was a lot easier to enlist them as part of the project than it was to try to fight them. And they ended up doing a lot of cat trapping for us. We discouraged feeding, and we definitely discouraged doing any additional feeding. It's not necessary. If the cats didn't have their food sources, they would not be there. And if you look at around the country where there's been litigation, legislation, public opposition to neuter return, the real issue has never been the neuter and return. The real issue has always been the feeding behavior that modifies the cat behavior.
Merritt, in the last 2 minutes, what misconceptions about companion animal overpopulation and euthanasia do you think the general public has?
Well, there's a widespread belief that maybe we can adopt them all out. Actually, what we have to do is prevent births. That's the only thing that has ever really worked. If you trace the decline of the number of animals coming into shelters and being killed since 1970, sterilization accounts for about 95% of the improvement. Improved adoption accounts for about 2.5% to 3%. And everything else we've done is for the remaining 2%.
Sterilization is key then, right?
Sterilization is key. If you want to reduce the feral cat population, you got to fix them. If you want to reduce the numbers of pit bulls coming into shelters, you got to fix them. It's simple as that.
Merritt, I appreciate your expertise. Thank you so much for appearing on Animals Today.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.
Opinions you hear on the Business Talk Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of this station, Business Talk Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Business Talk Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Investing involves risks, so please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about the Business Talk Radio Network, contact us at 203-323-7300 or at our website, businesstalkradio.net.